On August 20, 2020, a commercial flight made an emergency landing in Omsk, Siberia. On board, a passenger was screaming in agony, writhing in pain from what would later be confirmed as Novichok poisoning, the same military-grade nerve agent used in the Skripal attack. That passenger was Alexei Navalny, and his survival would become one of the most extraordinary stories of political defiance in modern history. 5 months later, fully aware that prison awaited him, Navalny boarded a plane back to Moscow. Why would anyone willingly return to a country that had just tried to kill them? The answer reveals not just one man's courage, but the anatomy of how a single individual can challenge an entire authoritarian system. From a lawyer's blog to investigations viewed by over 100 million people, from courtroom battles to organizing nationwide protests, Navalny has become something the Kremlin never anticipated, a threat it cannot ignore and cannot eliminate without making him more powerful. Nothing about Navalny's early life suggested he would become Russia's most prominent dissident. Born in 1976 to a Soviet army officer and an accountant, he grew up in a family that embodied Russia's contradictions. His father served the military, while his grandmother passionately hated Lenin, and the family secretly listened to Voice of America broadcasts. When the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991, 15-year-old Navalny mainly remembered the endless queues and the hypocrisy of communist officials who secretly envied Western lifestyles. Unlike the romantic revolutionaries of previous generations, Navalny came of age during Russia's chaotic 1990s transition to capitalism, witnessing both the promise of freedom and the devastating social costs of shock therapy reforms. By his late 20s, he was earning $4,000 to $5,000 monthly as a lawyer and investor, firmly part of Russia's emerging middle class. He could have continued this comfortable existence, but something shifted. Perhaps it was witnessing the 2003 parliamentary elections where liberal parties were systematically excluded. Perhaps it was seeing corruption devour Russia's oil wealth while ordinary citizens struggled. What's certain is that Navalny developed a directness rare in Russian political culture. What he says is what he thinks, a quality that would become both his greatest strength and his most dangerous liability.
Who owns Sergeant Neftegaz? This simple question at a 2008 shareholders meeting changed everything. By purchasing shares in the secretive oil company, Navalny gained legal standing to demand transparency, rights journalists didn't have. His legal and financial training let him navigate corporate structures, while his LiveJournal blog bypassed media censorship. He was using the system's rules against itself. His impact exploded. Blog posts receiving 235 comments in 2008 drew 9,000 by late 2010, with daily readership hitting 55,000 by 2011. Navalny's genius was recognizing corruption as the perfect political issue. It unified everyone. Unlike divisive stances on democracy or nationalism, corruption outraged both liberals and leftists. In a Russia where the 2000s boom enriched elites while public services languished, officials enjoying taxpayer-funded luxuries became unbearable. His 2010 Transneft investigation, claiming $4 billion vanished during pipeline construction, demonstrated his method. Choose emotionally resonant cases, use accessible language, let evidence speak.
What began as one lawyer with a blog evolved into Russia's most sophisticated opposition organization. In February 2011, Navalny posted a job advertisement seeking lawyers who want to fight against crooks day and night. His first hire was Lyubov Sobol, a 23-year-old Moscow State University graduate who proclaimed her personal hatred for the system. Vladimir Ashurkov, an investment banker earning about $1 million annually, abandoned his career to become executive director of Navalny's Anti-Corruption Foundation, FBK, in 2012. The foundation's investigations reached cinematic quality. Their March 2017 video, Don't Call Him Dimon, exposed Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev's alleged property empire, yachts, Tuscan villas, Moscow mansions, vineyards. Using drone footage to overcome 6-meter fences, the video opened devastatingly. You would never take this man for some kind of villain or underground billionaire. He's one of our country's richest people and one of its most corrupt officials. The video garnered 43 million YouTube views. YouTube became Navalny's personal television channel, with episodes averaging 400,000 views. By 2014, his blog was written by the Collective Navalny, associates who mastered his sharp, no-self-censorship style, allowing content to continue during jail stints. The Kremlin's response grew desperate, poisoning Sobel's husband, forcing the FBK to pay $1.1 million in defamation, designating the organization a foreign agent based on a $50 donation from a Russian in Florida. Navalny joined Yabloko, a small liberal party, in 2000, quickly rising through Moscow's ranks with characteristic bravado. "We're the only ones who don't fear Lushkov," he declared about Moscow's powerful mayor. As liberal parties collapsed, Yabloko received just 1.59% in 2007. He controversially fused liberal and nationalist ideologies, co-founding Narod in 2007. This got him expelled from Yabloko for causing political damage. His breakthrough came during the 2011-12 protests, when he addressed tens of thousands on Sakharov Avenue. "I see enough people here to take the Kremlin right now, but we're a peaceful force. We won't do that yet." In the 2013 Moscow mayoral race, he captured 27.24% against Sobyanin's 51.37%, nearly forcing a runoff despite media blackouts. His 2016 presidential campaign, though blocked by his Kirov-less conviction, built a nationwide network under the slogan, "Stop Feeding the Oligarchs." Navalny transformed protest into political strategy, with strategists Leonid Volkov, a former IT manager radicalized by election fraud. He established nationwide campaign offices functioning like branches of a hip retail chain. Modernized Russian flag colors, white, salmon pink, light blue green, signaled refreshing rather than revolutionizing the country. Each office received functional space, materials, and 2 to 3 paid staff, enabling immediate activist engagement. The recruitment proved efficient. 35% discovered Navalny through the Medvedev investigation. Half of 2017 protesters had never demonstrated before, and 60% of volunteers had no prior experience. Supporting Navalny publicly carried serious risks: family arguments, police searches, arrests, threats, university preventive conversations, and physical attacks. Most cited his perceived sincerity and courage as motivation. Many viewed their alliance pragmatically, supporting him because he'd built the only movement capable of strengthening political competition. Viktor, a former coordinator, explicitly called Navalny an instrument, inverting the Kremlin's portrayal of Navalny the manipulator. When Navalny launched smart voting in November 2018, concentrating opposition votes behind the strongest non-United Russia candidate, the Kremlin recognized it as a significant threat. On January 17, 2021, Alexei Navalny boarded a flight from Berlin to Moscow, surrounded by journalists. 5 months after his Novichok poisoning, his plane was diverted to avoid thousands of supporters. At passport control, he paused before a Kremlin poster. "This is my home. I am not afraid, and I urge you not to be afraid either." On February 2nd, Navalny stood in court, tracing a heart on the glass for his wife. Officially charged with violating probation by recovering in Germany, he declared the real reason was that he had mortally offended Putin by surviving. He received 2 years and 8 months in a penal colony. In Pokrov's corrective labor colony, Navalny faced constant reprimands and hourly sleep interruptions as an escape risk. Denied medical care, he began a hunger strike on March 31, losing 17 kilograms while maintaining his characteristic humor. Authorities simultaneously classified the FBK as an extremist organization, dismantling the political structures he'd built over a decade. Navalny's 19% approval rating in early 2021 masks deeper significance. Among 18 to 24-year-olds, it reaches 38%. These numbers reflect years of state vilification, not his potential in a free society. The Kremlin's actions reveal his true impact, Putin's refusal to speak his name, admission of surveillance before the poisoning, censorship of FBK investigations, and attacks on smart voting all demonstrate authorities take him seriously. Beyond personal achievement, Navalny has motivated thousands to overcome fear. His return to Russia, despite certain imprisonment, exemplifies leading by example. He envisions a wonderful Russia of the future that is not just free, but happy, challenging Russia's historical cycle of unhappiness. Rather than believing protests alone can overturn the system, he acts as prodder-in-chief, frustrating power at every turn. Removing Navalny doesn't solve the structural problems fueling discontent: elite corruption, stagnant wages, inequality. As he said, nobody is going to solve our problems. Foreign countries care about themselves. In a world where authoritarianism seems ascendant, Navalny's story offers a different lesson. One person, armed with courage, truth, and strategy, can shake the foundations of power. He has already achieved his most important victory, showing Russians they need not be afraid. That lesson cannot be imprisoned.